This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by MHA of Dutchess County, Foaman Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Locksat Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Filming Kleiman Collins and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation.
Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday.
Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, coming to you from the MHA studios here in Poughkeepsie, and we got a very unique episode for you guys. So besides Walsh Wednesday, I have the pleasure of producing podcasts for other people. I know, Connor's not the one behind the mic. Blasphemy. No, but it's a lot of fun. At the end of the day, I'm a storyteller, and I love getting a chance to help other people tell their stories. That's why I started doing Walsh Wednesday in the first place, and I have such a fun time interviewing people. But when people come in and have an idea for a show themselves and I can help materialize it and bring it to life, it brings me so much joy. So I just wanted to give them the spotlight on this episode. I'm going to be playing clips from some of the shows that I help produce, and hopefully you might decide that you like it and you follow along and you listen and you enjoy. There's a little something for everybody. I want to give a special honorable mention to Jamie Thivridge. I helped her produce the Behind the Lashes podcast. We only had a chance to produce a few episodes together, and then she got this amazing opportunity that was hard to pass up. So she's using all of her time and energy on that project. Jamie, it was a pleasure working with you, and I'm so excited with everything that you have to come. And hey, I know that we'll be doing some stuff in the future too. So Jamie, all the best. That being said, I have four shows that I want to show off today. One show, Your Best You, which I produced for MHA. You kind of got a little glimpse of that last week with Mark Viniello because we did a double episode. I got to have him on Walsh Wednesday, and then I got to have him on Your Best You right afterwards. Your Best You, of course, is real conversations around mental wellness, and Mark was the first guest on a new segment that we are doing, which is Starlight Spotlight, interviewing leaders and pioneers in and around the Hudson Valley, talking about their success and their psyche. I'll have links in the description of this episode for you to check that out. Last week was a blast talking with Mark, but that's not what we're starting off with today. What we're starting off with today is the Off Market Podcast with Don Minichino. I was introduced to Don from Michelle Barone with Michelle Barone Red and Michelle Barone Media. She works very closely with a lot of us here at MHA. Don was looking to do a podcast. Michelle introduced us, and honestly, I think it's been going great. Don works in the real estate world as a broker, but he's met so many incredible people through his job, he wants to bring them on to help share their stories. And this one's a pretty incredible one. Taking a clip from episode 2, Don speaks with TV executive, author, leader, father, and Ironman competitor, Tom Langan. Check this one out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. We've been having a great time doing these podcasts. I'm really happy to have, you know, a good friend of mine, a colleague we've known for years, Tom Langan, everyone, husband, father, author, videographer, legendeer. Check out this book. We'll get to this in a second. Tom, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I feel like I fanboy over you every time we talk, and you're like, Don, you need more interesting people in your life. And I'm like, dude, every time we talk, you're doing something like that I think is really crazy that I wish I could do. Maybe I can do. I just don't know it yet. You're running Ironmans and you've been doing them for years. Like, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think you just have to commit to being a little out of your mind. But
it's a good way to put it.
Yeah, right. You just have to be willing to own it. I mean, yeah, you know, like, look, I was athletic when I was a kid, and don't come from like a big athletic family. I was, you know, the only one in my family, you know, it's just me, my sister, and my parents, in my immediate family. I was the only one in my family who really played sports through high school. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, on 3 varsity sports my senior year in high school, and then had a knee injury playing football and ended up having to have surgery spring of my senior year in high school. And then again in the fall of my of my freshman year in college. So after my second knee surgery, the doctor kind of looked at me and said, you're not allowed to run anymore. And I was 19 years old. So I was like, what does that mean? Right. Sure. And he was like, I'll paint a picture for you. If somebody's pointing a gun at you, you can run. Otherwise, no running. And I was like, okay, well, that's aggressively specific. but fine. Mm-hmm. So I kind of didn't do anything for like 20 years. Right. And I just had a great time through my 20s, ate without any sort of thought about what I was putting in my mouth, like other than does it taste good, yeah. Right? Way more, chicken parm than anybody should eat, and far too many trips to my local Chinese restaurant. I also worked in Manhattan. I was working in the television industry at the time. I worked in Manhattan, and I was commuting back and forth on the train. I lived in Pleasantville down in Westchester, and there was a Chinese restaurant right by the train station. So it was a pretty common thing for me to like swing in there and grab a combo platter.
That's deadly.
Yeah,
that's deadly.
On the way home. So I had a great time. I was out, drinking every weekend with my buddies and just, living it up. And I developed a habit of smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, right? So like for 20 years, that was kind of my lifestyle. I was up in Alaska for work. Again, still in the television industry. I was a series producer on a show called Coast Guard Alaska. And so I was up in Alaska running that production, which is where I met my then girlfriend, now wife. She moved back to New York with me when I left that show. And she was coming back into the house from a run. She was training for her first marathon. And it was a Sunday morning. It was the longest run she'd ever done in her life. It was 20 miles. And she came back in, and she left before I'd gotten up. And by the time she got back from running 20 miles, I had made it to the couch and I had a cup of coffee in my hand, which is, I feel like kind of normal for a Sunday morning. But she came in, I was talking to her about how her run went, how she felt and all that good stuff. She went into the kitchen to get something to drink. And I just kind of had this moment where I just kind of like looked at myself and thought, man, you got to do something. You're being lazy. And that was kind of, that was the impetus that started all of it.
Wow.
And because I'm a nut job and I don't do anything halfway, I, instead of being like, maybe I'll ride on a bike a little bit or go swimming every once in a while.
Or
I
was just go to the gym twice a week.
Yeah.
And just walk on the treadmill or something.
Yeah. Instead of doing any of those kind of very normal things, I started cycling and then I started running and then I had a background in swimming. So somebody was like, hey, why don't you do a triathlon? And I was like, okay. And so I did a triathlon, actually a month before my 40th birthday. I did my first short course triathlon at West Point.
Okay. What were those distances?
So that was, it was what's known as a sprint.
Okay.
So it's like a 750 meter swim, okay. A 12 mile bike,
yep.
And then a 5K run, a 3.1 mile run.
Cool. I did one of those in Pawling like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, but you're like, a lot of people shy away from the swimming part because it's like, anyone can just like learn how to ride a bicycle, or even if you know how to ride a bicycle, train to, to be on a bicycle for 12 miles, no problem, right? But doing those three things back to back in itself is just really tough, even just the sprint one. Like I did it once 5 years ago and I was exhausted and I was like, I thought I trained well for this and I didn't at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's challenging for sure, but I did it and I was like, oh, that was kind of fun. And I was actually like halfway okay at it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I signed up for some more and I did like a half Ironman, a 70.3 distance race the next year. And then I was like, well, that went okay. I guess I'm doing an Ironman. So I signed up for my first Ironman that was supposed to be in 2020. And then 2020 happened, as we all know. And then, so it got delayed. So in 2021, I did my first Ironman race, and I've now done six of them.
They're kind of addictive, right?
Yeah, it's the challenge of it, I think, that's addictive. Like, it is, it always hurts. Like, and I think that's the thing that, like, people miss about it, right? And there's, like, in sort of endurance athletics, there's, like, a lot of jokes about, like, God, I went to the gym once and I was sore for days. Like, how do you do this? How can you, like, exercise 6 or 7 days a week and like not be sore? And the sort of the running joke is like, no, the trick is like, I'm always sore.
Sure.
You just become accustomed to it. But yeah, like they always hurt. It's never easy.
No. I mean, we talked about this before, but I used to do Spartan races, back in the day, 10 years ago, so for like 4 years in a row, a friend of mine, was training for these things called OCRs, obstacle course racing. It was like kind of a new thing then. And you Google Spartan race and you're like, oh, wow, this is like the whole theme is really cool. It's very attractive. And you do your first race and you're like, all right, it's basically like a 5K with like 15 obstacles. And then you go, okay, well, when was the last time I climbed a 20-foot rope? Like gym class in high school, right? So now you got to train to like climb a rope faster. And so like I did a handful of these and I remember the first race that I ran where I didn't fail any obstacle. Because like in Spartan races, like when you fail an obstacle, you got to do 20 burpees. And burpees are just hell. Nobody wants to do them, right? So you train harder so you don't have to do the burpees anymore. And I remember my first race was actually at Mohegan Sun. where I had no failures, no burpees. I didn't finish even in the top probably 50%, but I didn't care. Like, you just kind of get to the finish line and you're like, oh my God, I just did that. When's the next one?
Yeah.
You know, and then the cycle just starts all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually like, it does happen pretty quick, even for Ironman. Like, it does happen pretty quick that, like, you know, you are kind of, you, if you've done the race well, I think the you almost always try to leave as much on the course as you can, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because what are you saving it for?
Sure.
So
no regrets.
Yeah.
Like, no remorse. Just leave it all out there.
Right. Exactly. So you try to leave it all on the course. So you're pretty shattered by the time you finish, right? Yeah. I mean, like, you know, for me, my personal best is like 11 hours and 18 minutes, right? For a full distance Ironman, right? So like, it's 11 hours and 18 minutes of exercise straight.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so it's intense and you're pretty shattered at the end of it. It's surprisingly fast.
How do you stay hydrated? Like, do you bring snacks with you? Are there water stations? Like, how do you get through that? Like, the longest Spartan race I ever did was like a 15K and there were like 35 or 40 obstacles. And it was in the middle of the desert outside of Dallas, Texas. And it took me over 6 hours to finish that race. It was just miserable. And like, by the time I was done, I just didn't know like what I was doing in life. I was like having all these like euphoric experiences out in the desert running with the thousands of other people. And I was like, what are we doing with ourselves? Like, I questioned everything in life. But it's like along the way, you know, you have to bring a hydration pack and they encourage you to bring, you know, snacks with peanut butter, sandwiches, whatever it is, just anything with salt to keep you going. But like 11 hours, like,
yeah.
How do you sustain that?
Well, so sort of like commonly, your nutrition is referred to as like the fourth discipline in Ironman or in long course triathlon specifically. And really like you plan for it. So like you prep in advance, you like pre-hydrate, right? You take, because obviously there's no rest stops on the swim. So, you know, the swim, you got to get straight through. It's hard to eat or drink while you're swimming. The swim, you got to get through. So you sort of prehydrate, you drink a bunch, take on a bunch of electrolytes, and take on some fuel. And usually it's mainly like during the course of the race, you're pretty much only eating carbs, right? Because at the end of the day, it is, the most fuel efficient or the most efficient fuel for your body. It's the most accessible fuel for your body, and your body doesn't have really the capacity while you're exercising at that level to process or digest fats and proteins very well, right? Yeah. So of the three macros, right? Like carbs is really all you're eating all day.
Yeah.
And so you'll do like a carb load before the race. So for like,
it's pretty common with runners
too. Yeah. So like, for like 4 days before the race, I will bump up and eat a ton of carbs. Mm-hmm. And
that's gotta be fun.
Yeah. Well, you would think.
Yeah.
But so like, for example, if I do, generally speaking, if I do like a 3 day carb load, right. I have to, in order to eat, like to meet my carbohydrate goals, I have to eat the equivalent of about 13 bagels a day for 3 days in a row. So it sounds fun. And then you hear that and you're like, oh, that sounds awful. It's a lot. So like, but, and to be clear, I'm you're using not, that.
Yeah. It's for, an analogy.
Yes. Like I'm using that for like illustrative purposes because everybody knows what a bagel looks like. Yeah. Right. And probably everybody listening has had a bagel at some point. So it's like, it's just an easy thing that people are familiar with.
Yeah.
It's not how I do it, right? Yeah. Like fruit juice is actually a really easy way to get a ton of carbs in really quickly without like filling yourself up.
Yeah.
Right. And I tend to like tart cherry juice is a great one for that. Cause it also has some like anti-inflammatory properties. Mm-hmm. Because of some of, I think it's because of the polyphenols, but I mean, I'm not a dietitian, so don't quote me on that. Anyway, like, so you do this carb load beforehand, that helps build up the glycogen stores, both in your muscles and in your liver. Mm-hmm. And then essentially during the day you eat, basically kind of a subsistence volume. So like you eat enough to keep going, but you are definitely burning way more than you're eating. Mm-hmm. Right. So like during the course of a triathlon, I might burn, you know, 10,000 calories.
It's insane to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I might burn 10,000 calories that day. I'm only taking in maybe 4,000, right? Or 5,000. So like you're burning way more than you're taking in. Mm-hmm. It's just impossible to keep up.
Do you make that up over the next few days? Like, is there a post-race plan?
Yeah. I mean, like generally it's kind of like eat eat till you're satiated, eat till you're full for a couple of days afterwards. Yeah. And you're pretty hungry, especially the next day. Sure. That night too, usually like I get pretty hungry. I've gotten to the point where the first couple of races, like I did not want to eat afterwards. But I've gotten to the point now where I've been doing it long enough and I've done it enough times that like my body is kind of like, okay, we can handle this. All right, let's have some food.
It knows what's coming.
Yeah. And, yeah. and like, but you usually don't have a huge appetite right after. The next morning though, you wake up and you're like, I want to eat everything. Mm-hmm. Bring me all the food.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Jeez. What an experience, man.
Yeah. The second clip I want to show you guys comes from the Roots and Wings podcast. As you've seen in the past, I've worked with Iris Douglas on multiple media productions, and now it is a chance to have her daughter in the spotlight. Iris is kind of stepping back and being more like a executive producer in this, but she's definitely going to be popping in on the show, and it's really awesome. Nina, along with her friend Elena, are coming together to share their insight on issues such as mental health, relationships, and so much more. And I felt like the pitch for this was really, really cool. 20s, 40s, and 60s, taking from different points in life, different generations, and how similar it all is. Everything's all secular. It all comes back around. And what does something mean to somebody in different stages in their life? So without further ado, I'm going to introduce to you the Roots and Wings podcast, Iris, Nina, and Elena.
Roots and Wings family, welcome to our Roots and Wings podcast. I am Nina, this is Elena, and today we have a special guest, my mother, Iris Douglas.
Namaste, girls.
She is the reason for it all. She is the reason why we started this podcast. This was her baby, and she passed it over to us, and we are so, so grateful to take on this challenge and this project. Today we are going to be discussing the age gaps and how we all have similar problems in life. They just show up a little bit differently in different stages of our lives. So we have a few questions to start for my mother, because she is in her 60s, Elena's in her 40s, and I'm in my 20s. So we're just going to discuss what that age gap looks like and how we navigate life through that age gap. So the first question is, what does self-love look like in your 60s?
Self-love in my 60s is owning everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Letting go of what no longer serves me and moving onward with just pride, dignity, and honoring everything, all the jobs opportunity, all the friendships, all the business opportunities, and just sitting down, relaxing, and just helping now my family and leaving a legacy. You know, that's what it looks like in my 60s. I'm building to leave something behind for you, for your sister, for your nephews, for your niece. You know, that's what it looks like in my 60s, making sure that my husband and I, we have a peaceful life, that we have everything we need, that I'm there to serve our community, friends, family, whatever. That's very important to me, because when you're in your 60s, you get mad sentimental. And, you know, it's very compassionate time. It's very like, oh, bendito, I know what you're going through. So, you know, it's that time. And that's why Roots and Wings, it's all about you. It's all about you, girls, learning on from your roots. How do you get your wings? How from the bottom of the soil, how do you become that beautiful goddess and that princess to fly? How do you do that? So that's what I'm here. That's what it looks like in my 60s. Me becoming an elder and being part of a community and empowering women, and especially my daughter and whoever she's with. That's what it looks like in my 60s. So thank you so much for that. I like that question, by the way.
So the next question is, what are some things you still struggle with in your 60s when it comes to self-love?
Ooh. I would say my struggles is trying to get my emotions balanced, because everything that's going around me, the universe, friends, families, opportunities, relationship, partnerships, business, there are so many triggers that come to you. And if you don't know how to handle those triggers with grace and integrity and patience, you can fall back, especially when you're in your 60s, especially when you're getting older, because you don't want to say, why did I do that? You did it. Move forward. It happened. Something you learned. Move onward. Don't be in your head. And that's what I highly recommend for Nina in her 20s and definitely you, sweetheart, for in your 40s. Don't get stuck in your heads. So those are some challenges that I tend to still struggle with. But when I practice my meditation, when I practice my yoga, and when I practice my affirmations and my intentional work, I find myself more balanced that I can handle these challenges and I make better choices because I'm more aligned with my spirit, my mind, and my body, which is super, super important. So yeah, so those are the challenges that I find myself sometimes is going triggers that want me to go back to my old ways. And I'm like, nah, it's not, you're not going to get me. I'm moving onward. So yeah, thanks. That was a good question.
So this is super interesting. Like your perspective is the 60s, mine is the 40s versus the 20s. And like she said in the intro, the problems don't go away. They just show up differently, right? So I had to learn, and Nina and I spoke about this the other night when we had dinner, like what did it look like for me to have self-love in my 20s or my 30s, and now my 40s looks completely different. And it goes back to learning who you are. And there was something that came up between the two of us was like, I suffered with destination addiction. I don't know if you know what that is. It's like, oh, when it's summer, then I'll be happy. Or, oh, when I'm in that relationship, I'll be happy. Or when I get that job and I get that raise, like I'll be happy. And you don't realize like you're living, you're losing out on life because you're always waiting for the next best thing. And the next best thing doesn't come because you're creating your reality as you're in it, right?
Absolutely.
So it goes back to really having that connection to self, that self-trust, that relationship that you have with yourself, which took me a while to cultivate. And I look at Nina and I'm like, oh, I know what you're going through. A lot of the times, like she's my sister's age, my little sister's mm-hmm. age. So it feels our age gap, I love it because I feel like I'm reflecting back on who I was in my 20s as well. And it's so important. I didn't know what me time was. I didn't spend time like cultivating that relationship with myself back then. And then I realized like how important that is for a foundation. And that will take you through your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and so on.
So that's what I'm here for. You know, and I appreciate you both asking me that question because we're here to learn from one another. You're teaching her.
Absolutely.
We're teaching each other. She's mm-hmm. teaching others. We got this.
Yes, mom, you are like, you are such a powerhouse. You have such youthful energy. You just light up a room and we're just, it's such a blessing to look forward to you, to have you as my mother, because it's just like, wow. Like when I am in my 60s, I want to be just like that. I want to be dancing salsa. I want to be with the girls.
Looking sexy.
Yes. Like, and I know that is cultivated through your spiritual practice and also your experiences.
Absolutely. Well, sweetheart, you were there. You were there when I was in my 40s. Well, 30s, you were still young, but you were there in my 40s, mid 40s, late 40s. What happened? Let it go, boy.
Oh my God, this cat.
Wait.
Let's pause. Hold on. The cat is moving the tripod. No, you can't play with that.
So, mom, one last question. What is a one-liner that you can give women who are embracing themselves in their 60s?
You're better than ever. Better than ever. You hold all your good juju in now. You hold all your good juju in now because you don't have to deal with the rustle, the bustle and the hustle and the kids are grown. You know, it's time to do you. It's time to self, you know, to embrace your femininity, your sexiness back. Because just because you're 60 don't mean you old. Because 60, let me tell you, 60 is the new 30.
I
feel it all the time. As long as you keep that childlike energy.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't gonna get old. You ain't gonna get old. So I'm sorry, you said one liner, but I had to take it to a different level. I apologize.
Perfect. Thank you, Ma. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You're welcome. So listen, with that said, I'm gonna let you girls now go. You do you. You're in good hands with Connor. I just wanted to make sure you guys give you a blessing. And it's time for you guys to glow. I'm here when you guys need me. All right.
Mwah. Have a good day. Love you.
Bye, Connor. Bye-bye.
And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
When we talk about mental health, we often focus on the symptoms, anxiety, depression, isolation. But what we don't talk about nearly enough is the root cause. And more often than not, that root cause is trauma. This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at Mental Health America of Dutchess County. trauma doesn't always look dramatic. Sometimes it's quiet. Sometimes it's an experience you've carried alone for years. Sometimes you've never spoken about it because it feels shameful or because you were told to just move on. But here's the truth. Holding a painful secret doesn't protect you. It weighs on you. It shapes how you think, how you feel, and how you move through the world. It can impact relationships and jobs, the way you attach to people and interpersonal friendships and work relationships, and you don't have to keep carrying that weight by yourself. Healing is possible when you finally feel safe enough to talk about it. Contact a therapist today. If you need help with that process, contact your primary care physician or call MHA of Dutchess County. We're happy to help you find someone. It's time to take care of yourself. You just may have the best year of your life.
For 60 years, we here at Foam and Wash Car Wash pride ourselves on giving back to the community. Because we're your neighbors. It's our community too. In celebration of Foam and Wash's 60th anniversary, we want to say thank you. By visiting the link on screen and in the description, you'll receive one free hot wax and shine car wash. No hassles, no gimmicks, just a token of our appreciation. Foam and Wash Car Wash, home of the Unlimited Wash membership. Thank you for being part of Foam and Wash Car Wash's story for the last 60 years.
This episode is also sponsored by Juniors 2. Come on out to Juniors 2 in Poughkeepsie, New York for Thursday Night Trivia, hosted by CMJW Entertainment. Play as a team as you work your way through four rounds of trivia categories in order to win gift certificates and other prizes. Juniors 2 Trivia Nights, every Thursday starting at 7 p.m. at 1126 Dutchess Turnpike, Poughkeepsie. Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleidman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
In 1 year, I went from unemployed making videos in my family room to becoming a top 40 under 40 honoree, gaining hundreds of thousands of views. And I'm just getting started. It's time for the second annual Walsh Wednesday Fun Drive. It's Connor coming at you once again, and what better day to launch the second annual Fun Drive than to do it on National Connor's Day? Seriously, that's a thing, not some April Fool's prank. Guys, 2025 was such a transformative year here at Walsh Wednesday, and I'm so excited to see what 2026 has to offer. Over the span of the last 60 plus episodes, not only have we gotten to speak with local leaders and creators, but we worked with platinum selling artists, Broadway veterans, Hollywood actors, banana ball players, and even Olympians. Because of the hard work from this past year, Walsh Wednesday is once again nominated for Best Podcast, part of Hudson Valley Magazine's Best of Hudson Valley. None of this would be possible without you, so thank you. You can help Walsh Wednesday continue to grow by donating to our GoFundMe and by voting for Walsh Wednesday for Best Podcast. Both links can be found in the description of this episode. And if you don't have the funds to donate at this time, that's fine. I totally get it. Just sharing alone goes such a long way. We got some really cool plans for 2026. As you've seen, we've recently launched our trivia spinoff, Walsh Whiteboards, which honestly has been a blast to film. Not just that, we're hoping to go on the road more often to show you incredible sights, stories, exhibits, and more that can't be captured in the studio. From the bottom of my heart, I greatly appreciate you for believing in what Walsh Wednesday is and what it will become. The second annual Walsh Wednesday Fun Drive and the Best of Hudson Valley voting will end on April 30th. That being said, Connor Walsh signing off for Walsh Wednesday on National Connors Day. And as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show. And play. Rise and shine to the iconic light. With coffee in one hand and confidence in the other. Yes, I'm talking about Lori Eve Tatarski, local Hudson Valley author. She's hosting her show, The Lori Tatarski Morning Show, and it's a blast. It's showing off her personality by interviewing others and having moments where she's just addressing the camera, kind of like what I'm doing right now, and highlighting her book, I Dare You to Walk in My Shoes, which I have right here. She even signed it for me. See, you can check it out. So to introduce the Lori Tatarski Morning Show, here's a clip from episode 2 as she introduces what she's hoping to do with this show.
Good morning, everyone. This is the Lori Toftarski Morning Show. Rise and shine to the iconic light. Make it bright. Coffee in one hand, confidence in the other. And my coffee mug today says, choose to shine. And we all have that free will. We all have the ability to choose to shine. Regardless of what you do, present the best you can present. And then ask the universe or God or whoever you may believe in to have you shine even brighter. So in retrospect, yesterday was a very beautiful day for me. That's probably why I'm wearing my, can you zoom in on these? The Lilo and Stitch sneakers, which to me look like little bunnies, which is always very exemplary for Easter. I actually bought these about a year ago, and I didn't even know, if you can believe it, who these adorable characters were. And then whenever I started wearing them, little kids would like be in amazement and be like, oh my God, I love your sneakers. And even adults would like stop me. You know, those that are blessed to have their inner child still within them. I started to explore the characters, and it was a very good, it was almost like an intuitive buy for me because I'm very enamored with the characters. So yesterday, I did go to church, and it was a beautiful service. And afterwards, I volunteered at the kids' ministry, and I had the time of my life. The little kids were so adorable, dressed in their beautiful Easter outfits. And some of the little girls I was playing with, and we were laughing and coloring and playing games, and I was so joyful. I was so joyful, and they were joyful, and it was just such an encapsulating moment. And they're like, could you come over for dinner? And it just felt so good. I know, I've never been blessed to biologically have my own children, but I've always been drawn to children. I have many people in my life that are like daughters to me, and it's been very special. So it was just a beautiful day of sharing time with family and friends and giving service and taking in some beautiful words. And I was telling my producer, Mr. Connor Walsh, that I'm in such a grateful place. I just feel so lucky to be able to have this opportunity to do this podcast and meet such interesting people and to be able to help and hopefully heal others through the different stories that we'll be engaging in. Today, I'm going to be touching upon, it's just going to be good old me. I don't have any guests per se today, but I am going to be touching upon something what I find very fascinating, the power of not only love, but the power of laughter. I've always been into laughter ever since I'm little. I always enjoyed making others laugh and chuckling, and to the point where, you know, I couldn't even stop laughing. I remember growing up, and we used to go to the library, and I would have these giggling attacks. And one day, it was almost traumatizing, but I look back and I still kind of chuckle. But I got sent to the quiet room at the library, and that was just merely for laughing uncontrollably. But here nor there, it's still a fond memory. This is my book. It's called I Dare You to Walk in My Shoes. The premise behind it is, until you've walked in my shoes, do not judge me. Do not think you know my story. Do not give opinions, so on and so forth. It's my belief that everybody has a voice to be heard. Everybody has a story to be told, and everybody has the right to tell that story. So as you can see, the cover I made very whimsical, almost like Walt Disney. And this is me, the fairy princess, sprinkling my fairy dust and making dreams come true. And poignantly, I'm coming out of a cage, almost like being imprisoned. And that's many times how I felt during my journey of dealing with trauma and mental health challenges such as bipolar and food addiction since the age of 10 years old. And I'm not going to reveal my age, but it's many years. Not many, many years, but many years. The cover also reveals the clouds, but the sun peeking through, because my very dear friend, that unfortunately is no longer on this realm, used to say, on a cloudy, rainy day, be the sun that shines from within. And I think that's a beautiful way of looking at life. You know, always try to be the sunshine that shines from within, that comes from a deep place. And it's also going back towards the castle, that feeling of parliament, that feeling of safety. That's very much how I felt in my younger years. And of course, I said this, magnificently spreading history by truthfully telling my story. Because we all kind of create a history when we authentically and truthfully find the courage and the resilience to tell our own story. And I also put this, once upon a crime, barely existing in Never Never Land, at long last, miraculously returning and thriving in Forever Everland. And basically what I'm surmising is when you deal with life's challenges, they can be very painful and confusing. And you almost feel like you're in this Never Never Land. You want out of it so bad. And finally, through faith, sometimes for those, and love, and sometimes for belief and hope, even if it's just a little mustard seed, miraculously, you return and not only exist, but thrive in Forever Everland. And I look at Forever Everland as something that is ongoing, almost like eternity. For those that may not be at that point, it's just being in something that's ongoing, that doesn't necessarily give a... Sorry about that. I got so enamored and animated, but that necessarily gives that screeching halt. The book is a memoir, and it's certainly a memory, so to speak. And there's an aspect of it I want to focus on today, which is, even though it was extremely painful moments in the book where I talk about suicidal ideation and even my own injurious behavior. And I talk about just being in the throes and depths of depression and loss and things like that. There still was a comedic way of looking at things. With everything I've been through, I know I have a incredible purpose. And part of it is to heal those that are suffering and to point people back towards the incredible light. Choose to shine once again. Let me get some coffee. I need some caffeine. I went through a whole transformation. I went from the depths of despair back to a baseline, they call it. And I could start to feel freedom and liberated and that I was getting back to myself. And a big part of who I am is humor and comedy and looking at things with a bright perspective. And that's nothing light to speak about, but certainly fascinating and interesting and mesmerizing.
While the other three podcasts that I showed you are just starting out, this next podcast is turning to a new chapter. I've had the pleasure of working with Yvette O'Sullivan and the Vital Women podcast for about a year now, and Yvette is taking her energy and pivoting from podcasting to becoming a published author. She's releasing her children's book, Mac the Disc Dog, and it's going to be a bilingual book. You can get it in English and in Spanish, and it talks about her dog, Mac, as he competes in disc competitions. The book's going to be great for children of all ages, and it talks about resiliency, collaboration, and so much more. So again, it's been a pleasure working with Yvette O'Sullivan up to this point on the podcast. And as she turns the page, we get to talk about her new book, and we'll see what the future brings for her. So here is a clip from the last episode, or last episode for now, of the Vital Women podcast.
You're listening to the Vital Women podcast.
My new bilingual children's book in English and Spanish, Mac the Disc Dog. Mac isn't just a dog. He is a border collie. He's a teacher. In this book, he goes on a journey to find out who he is. He discovers a sport he loves, but he has to use grit to get good at it. This can also be used as a social-emotional learning tool. As a social worker, I know that kids ages 4 to 8 need to see themselves in stories. By making it bilingual, I'm making sure more families can sit down together and talk about resilience and identity. If you ever felt like you had to reinvent yourself, which is what we have talked about on some episodes, then you'll understand why this book matters. I'm taking Mac on the road. I'll be promoting the book to make sure kids know that their identity is shaped by their perseverance and passion. To do this right, I need to give all of my energy to launch the book this June. I have to step back from the mic for now. Being a vital woman means knowing where to focus your energy and the fire to do the things that you are passionate about. I ask you to follow the journey on social media platforms. Even though the episodes are pausing, the mission isn't. You can follow Mac's journey and my book tour once all the logistics are set up.
This is very near and dear to your heart. This is not like this is some you're pulling this out of nowhere kind of concept for the book. This is something that's very personal to you. So tell us where this all came from to write this.
Well, first of all, I've always wanted to write a book since I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. When I left college, that's when I first got the idea. Mm-hmm. I never got around to writing because life happens.
Yeah.
I got married, became a mother, focused on my career. And as you and I have talked in the past, you know, recently I'm working on my creativity. Therefore, when COVID happened, that's when I decided to pivot in life and develop my creative side. So during COVID, that's when I acquired my dog, Mac, and he's a border collie. It's a very interesting story of who he has become today, because we picked him up on a farm in New York State, and not any ordinary farm. It was a farm that belonged to my daughter. He is one of 11 pups, and he was not selected. So it's interesting because people may think that dogs don't have feelings or that dogs don't express what they're going through.
They certainly do.
So through my observation during this period, I noticed that he was kind of sad that he was left behind. And I believe one of the reasons that he was left behind was because he was small. And border collies, by nature, are raised to be working dogs. Mm. So the area where my daughter had the farm is very populated by Amish population. And they saw that the bigger pups, the maybe stronger pups, would be better working dogs for them. Well, Mac worked his way into our lives. I have changed the story a little bit for the purpose of children understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, I'm sharing how he became a very resilient dog, developed grit, persevered in becoming the dog that he is today, because he's not a herding dog, even though that's his nature, but he has developed a passion for playing disc, and he competes. And in the first competition that we enrolled him in, he won first prize.
Amazing.
Which we were totally surprised because we weren't expecting that.
Yeah.
So in order for parents and children to get a better idea of his journey, which it has not been an easy journey, you need to buy the book when it's released in June. But talking about, you know, passion, it is a passion of mine to create a voice, and not only, you know, for women, as I've been doing for the last year, but also for children. Because when I first became a social worker many, many years ago, I started working with children. And especially post-COVID, I think a lot of children are going through certain uncertainty, certain nervousness, maybe not knowing what's going to happen next because the world has changed so much and there's always something happening. So I hope by writing this book that I can bring some comfort to them.
As you mentioned before, the podcast, we're taking a pause on this. What's it been like for you to create this platform for a year and now to, again, not to end this, but to pivot it and use your energy in a new creative outlet? What has what you've done in the past year influenced and strengthened you into this next chapter?
Great question. Well, prior to the podcast, I started to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started the podcast, I was in the midst of working with the illustrator. But one thing that the podcast has done for me is also I've developed grit and perseverance to try different endeavors, to lose that fear and accept that I don't have to do things in life one particular way. And even though that I am walking into the unknown, just like I did with the podcast, I'm going to get through it. And I am open and feel blessed to have all these opportunities, because maybe sometimes people don't get to do or work on what they're passionate in. And I've had several guests on the podcast, and they have talked about their life stories and different ways that they have been resilient to be who they are today. So that also has helped me to give me that bravery.
Yeah.
Because I feel sometimes, you know, women in midlife, we start to question, and we may develop fear and may not push ourselves to do certain things. So one thing that I have learned from having all of my guests and the challenges that they've gone through is just keep going, keep going.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to figure it out. And that's what life is all about. And that's the beauty of it.
So one thing that's really interesting about this book, you're also reaching out to a bilingual audience, which is really neat, because that was something that you were really trying to promote with the podcast, of really highlighting the Spanish culture and the English culture and bringing it into one. You're doing the same thing with the book here. So how does that feel to get to express both backgrounds that are make you one, make you whole?
Thank you for asking that question. Yes, my background is also, I am Dominican. And in embracing that background and also being a social worker, I found that there isn't enough material out there that is written in Spanish. And in this country, I also feel that there's a big push for immigrants to learn to read and write and speak in English. But when they are home, they also need to feel safe and that they can speak in their own language and that they can read to their children in their own language, in Spanish. So therefore, it was very important for me to write the book in English and Spanish to give that level of them, of people feeling safe in their own home. And, you know, sometimes also when children are exposed to English in school, they start to lose their native language. And I hope with this book that they start to feel also that they can continue to carry their native language and appreciate it. Because there was a point in my life where I did not appreciate knowing Spanish.
Really?
But as I mature and became an adult, you know, I was like, no, this is my mother's language. I need to hold on to it. And that's what I've done. And there are times, you know, as an adult that certain words do not come to me in Spanish. But once again, it's about keeping that love for the language alive and refreshing my vocabulary once in a while. Yeah. And that's what I did with writing the book, because it was a challenge writing it in Spanish as well. So I want to bring that to light. Don't lose your Spanish native language.
Yeah. It's something to be proud of. It's who you are. You know, each person, we are a culmination of all those who came before us and who will come after us. So, you know, having the pride in our culture, it's very important to do. So being able to latch onto that with this book, I think that's a great approach.
Thank you.
Yvette, it has been a pleasure working with you over this past year on this podcast, and I'm really excited where you can take this book, where you can take Mac and everything. This is going to be a great new chapter for you.
It certainly is. Thank you.
Absolutely.
To the audience, stay vital. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just turning the page to a new chapter.
And those are the clips that I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you consider checking out and subscribing to some of these other podcasts. It's a real pleasure to get to work with each one of them week after week after week and seeing how these new stories are presented. Next week, we're going to get back to our regular Walsh Wednesday programming with interviews and more interesting discussions. We got some fun stuff coming up for you guys. That being said, I'm Connor Walsh, and as always, we're glad we get to spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week: MHA of Dutchess County, Foman Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman Kleiman Collins and Safe LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon.